In order for it to be said that an event has stood the test of time, it must first endure all challenges which stand before it. Remaining unfazed in the face of adversity and all that history may present, for 147 years the Kentucky Derby has proven to stand the test of time unlike any event in the history of sports. Its traditions revered. Winners exemplifying greatness.
It's Secretariat moving away. He has it by 2.5.
Coming to the wire. Seattle Slough opens it to 4 lanes.
But it's going to be a firm escape clause that is going to win the 104th running of the Kentucky Derby.
Coming to the finish, American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Kentucky Derby.
And its results, stirring emotions only made possible by achieving a lifelong dream.
He's on the lead, Miss Kelly. He's on the lead. He's gonna win. He's gonna win. He's gonna win. He's gonna win. He's a winner. He's a winner, Miss Kelly.
Today, as the Kentucky Derby returns to its rightful place on this first Saturday in May, a new chapter will be written. And the greatest 2 minutes in sports will once again surpass the test of time. Welcome to Churchill Downs and the oldest continuously held major sporting event in America, the 147th Run for the Roses.
In partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network, the Horse Racing Radio Network proudly presents exclusive coverage of the 2021 Kentucky Derby. Brought to you by Twin Spires, the wagering home of the Kentucky Derby. Now, let's go trackside at Churchill Downs and join host Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. A very pleasant good afternoon and welcome to the 147th renewal of the greatest 2 minutes in sports, which returns this year to its customary placing on the first Saturday in May. Mike Penna, alongside the voice of Keeneland Racecourse, Kurt Becker, on an absolutely glorious afternoon for the sport of Kings under clear skies, more a shade of Carolina blue than Kentucky blue, but we'll take it. A few wispy clouds, temperatures hovering in the mid-70s, and a fast main track awaiting the 19 horses who will make their way to the starting gate right around 7 o'clock Eastern time. Last year, the COVID-19 pandemic forced the Kentucky Derby to be shifted from the first Saturday in May to the first Saturday in September, and although the race was run, there were no mint juleps, no fancy hats, and no seersucker suits, and certainly no roar from the crowd as the last horse entered the starting gate. The Kentucky Derby, like every other sporting event in 2020, was held without fans in attendance. Today, however, as we look down upon the historic racetrack from our position high above the finish line, it is a much different scene. The infield, although not as crowded as it normally would be, does have a limited number of fans milling about. Some have even brought blankets to set up their own picnic areas, while others have decided to stake claim to a spot in the newly erected bleachers on the inside of the turf course, which have replaced the corporate tents, at least for this year. The fancy hats, the flashy suits, which were relegated to the closet in 2020, are back again, and the Kentucky Derby feels like the Kentucky Derby. Kurt Becker, it has been a long time coming, and I can tell you, it is truly a sight for sore eyes, my friend.
It really is. Now, of course, the health protocols remain in place. There won't be 150,000 people present as usual, but there will be a crowd. Some say 50,000, probably closer to 75 or 80,000 as folks continue streaming in. Number of folks from the world of entertainment and pop culture as well. Just a spectacular day on which to enjoy the race. And with fans back and present for the Derby, this historic one-mile racetrack, where every single edition of this race has been held since the inaugural back in 1875, it's never looked better.
As we look down to our left, we look down the top of the home stretch where the horses will turn as they make that run for home shortly after 7 o'clock Eastern time this afternoon. And Kurt, it's great to be able to look down there and see people lining the aprons, see people in the grandstand and clubhouse areas beneath the Twin Spires, which are adjacent to us. It is just a great scene here today.
Yeah, there are folks on the infield who have purchased seats in the uncovered reserve box seating area. Mike, you talked about the folks who down toward the first turn and over toward the far turn on that 24-acre infield, they have spread blankets. They've got their camping chairs. Most of those camping chairs seem to be either red or blue. No doubt some loyalties to the University of Louisville and the nearby University of Kentucky just down the road. General admission, $85. to get you on the grounds and get you out to the infield to enjoy the day.
Not only does the Derby return to the first Saturday in May, but because of that, Kurt, it returns to its usual spot as the first leg in the Triple Crown Series, which is completely different than what we saw a year ago.
Yeah, in fact, last season it was the Belmont Stakes in New York that got things going in June. The Derby moved to Labor Day weekend last year. The Preakness ended up being the final leg of the series in Maryland in October. This year, we're back to the traditional format. The Derby gets the Triple Crown Series started today. The Preakness in Baltimore coming up 2 weeks from today. And then 3 weeks after the Preakness on June 5, we go back to Long Island for the Belmont Stakes.
Let's talk about a couple of the storylines associated with this year's field. And in particular, when you talk about the Kentucky Derby, you have to talk about one gray-haired trainer by the name of Bob Baffert, who has won the race a record 6 times, looking for number 7. This year with Medina Spirit. He teams up with jockey John Velasquez, and that is significant.
It is, because they teamed up to win this race back in September, the last time the Kentucky Derby was run, winning it with Authentic, who went on from there, of course, to win the Breeders' Cup Classic later in the year. And Bob Baffert's horse, Medina Spirit, may be flying somewhat under the radar. 5 career starts, never worse than second, but really isn't getting a great deal of respect. It's been hanging around up there around 12-1, 15-1 in the wagering so far.
Bob Baffert, if he could pull it off, would stand atop the list with 7 Derby wins. Nobody better than Bob Baffert when it comes to the Kentucky Derby. It is time now to take our first look at this year's Derby field. Plus, we'll meet the jockeys who will be aboard later today.
Airad Ortiz from Puerto Rico, known agenda.
I'm jockey Drayden Van Dyke, born in Louisville, Kentucky, and I'm riding like the king.
Umberto Rispoli, I'm from Napoli, Italy. I'm riding Brooklyn Strong.
I'm David Cohen from Kentucky, and I ride Keep Me in Mind.
Corey Lannery from Louisiana, riding Sainthood.
Marcelino Pedroza, Panama, Obesos.
Sonja Wu from France, Mendaloon.
Johnny Velasquez from Puerto Rico, Medina Spirit.
My name is Flavian Pratt. I'm from France, and I'm riding Hot Rod Charlie.
2-time Derby winner Mike Smith from Dexter, New Mexico, and I'm riding Midnight Bourbon.
Jose Ortiz, Puerto Rico, Dynamic One.
Julien Leparou from France, Ilium.
Hi, my name is Rafael Bejarano. I'm from Peru, and I ride in Hidden Stash.
This is Luis Saez from Panama, Essential Quality.
Joel Rosario from Dominican Republic, Proxy World.
I'm Javier Castellano. I'm from Venezuela. I will ride Highly Motivated.
My name is Ricardo Santana. I'm from Panama. I'm riding Super Stock.
Hi, I'm Tyler Gaffleon. I'm from Davie, Florida, and I'll be riding Soup and Sandwich.
Kendrick Cormooch, Louisiana, Bird Body.
Truly an international field of superstar jockeys getting ready to compete here this afternoon in the Kentucky Derby. Time now for a check of the current Derby odds. Post position number 1, that's Known Agenda, the Florida Derby winner, 11-1. Number 2, Like the King, 45-1. Number 3 is Brooklyn Strong, currently odds of 39-1. Another long shot, post 4, Keep Me in Mind, 44-1. Sainthood, post position 5, is 38-1. Number 6, Obesos, likewise, 38-1. Checking in at 28-1 right now is Mandaloon in post 7. Post 8, Medina Spirit, the Bob Baffert trained horse, 12-1. Number 9 is Hot Rod Charlie, winner of the Louisiana Derby, checks in at 5-1 odds. Number 10 is Midnight Bourbon, ridden by Mike Smith, 12-1 odds. Number 11, Dynamic One, 40-1. Number 12 is Helium, 35-1. Number 13 is Hidden Stash, 33-1 odds. The current favorite, number 14, Essential Quality, checks in at odds of 5-2. Rock Your World, the Santa Anita Derby winner, post 15, odds are 5-1. Number 16, King Fury, is scratched. 17, Highly Motivated, the runner-up in the Bluegrass Stakes, 11-1. Number 18, Superstock, the Arkansas Derby winner, 32-1. Number 19, Soup and Sandwich, 24-1. And Bourbonic, the upset winner of the Wood Memorial in New York, post position 20, checks in at 27-1.
All right, a talented field. Again, the loss of King Fury, named for heavyweight champion Tyson Fury. He came out yesterday after spiking a fever, so 19 instead of 20 this year. But a talented field of 19, a well-matched field of 19. They'll go to the post right around 7 o'clock Eastern time. Tom Leach is trackside. Tom, you know, one great thing about the Kentucky Derby, as Kurt alluded to earlier, is not just the return of the fans, but the return of the celebrities here today. And you got a chance to catch up with one earlier this week.
Yes, Jim Boeheim, the coach of the Syracuse Orange, is a Hall of Famer. He's won a national championship. He's taken the Orange to multiple Final Fours, and he is having the time of his life. We had a chance to visit with him earlier this week.
Well, I'm excited about it. We've got a group of people down here. I'm not a big horse racing fan, but, you know, I met my my wife 27 years ago at the Kentucky Derby. So it's been a good place for me. Maybe we'll get lucky and get some miracle today. You got to bet on your own horse if he's a 50-1, but, you know, there's some possibility. A 16 seed can be the one once every 30 years, but we're not expecting that, but we will take it if it happens.
Coach, this horse races under the name of BBN Racing, and it's blue and white blocks here in the state of Kentucky. That stands for the Big Blue Nation, which is the Kentucky fan base. So have you tried to work a little orange into the color scheme?
No, we don't have it in there, but we're going to try. We're going to try. This is a Kentucky basketball state. You know, we know that. Every time we come to Louisville to play, about 20 people wish us good luck in Louisville against Louisville because they're all Kentucky fans here. It's the nature of the state. It's a great basketball state and unbelievable basketball tradition.
What do you know about your horse, Hidden Stash?
Well, he just barely got in. You know, he just snuck in at the back end of the field. So, you know, he's in over his head. Somebody described it as like a good college player playing against a pro, NBA's all-star. So it's going to be a tough go, but, you know, we'll see what happens. And excited about it. It should be fun.
Well, racing is a person-to-person sport, jockey and horse. So I don't know that Coach Boeheim can give them any help with that famous 2-3 zone of his. So Hidden Stash is going to have to do it with the man-to-man defense, if you will, against his rivals today. Rick Pitino's the only other college basketball coach that I can recall that has had a Kentucky Derby starter before. Mike?
Hey, great to have Coach Boeheim in attendance and part of our sport here this afternoon. Still to come, the story of a Hall of Fame trainer looking to take a bit of a different route to his first Derby win, plus conversations with trainer Brad Cox and Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen. But up next, we'll tell you the story of the horse nobody wanted, who very well could find himself draped in roses later today.
You're listening to exclusive coverage of the 147th Kentucky Derby on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires.
Hall of Fame nominated trainer Doug O'Neill is going to be looking for a third Kentucky Derby victory later this afternoon, and in just 4 days, he will find out if his plaque will be forever enshrined in Saratoga Springs, New York. But for the moment, his focus is on a talented colt who, as you'll hear, continues to exceed all expectations.
It's safe to say Hot Rod Charlie enters the Kentucky Derby on the upswing. This is not surprising, as the son of Oxbow has flown under the radar his whole life and repeatedly rewarded his fans while proving the naysayers wrong. As the popular Heartland song intimates, Bloodstock agents Shauna and Bob Feld loved him first. It's a story Bob loves to tell.
Sean and I work every sale in North America, the major circuits, and we're always looking for something, whether it's for a client or for ourselves. But we went to the February Fate of Kipton sale, and we really liked this colt, and, you know, he was an Oxbow, which is not the most popular sire out there right now, and we just decided we'd buy it and, you know, maybe pinhook it or maybe syndicate it down the road. He was just too nice not to have. So we went after him. I think our limit was 20. We ended up getting him for 17. And the rest is history. I mean, he just really developed. But he wasn't that popular. So then Sean got on the phone and started texting everybody he knew, basically in the business, saying, hey, this colt's awesome, and you should really look at him. And Dennis O'Neill responded and liked what he saw and called Sean and talked about the colt, and Dennis went after him.
And Hot Rod Charlie was his kind of prospect.
Yeah, I got a call from Sean Feld, actually a text, saying that he had a half to Matoli, and I was all excited about that. And then he said by Oxbow, and I was like, uh-oh. And he said that was kind of light as far as people looking at him, and would you please take a look at him? And anyways, he sent me a couple videos and the vet report and all that stuff, and I was immediately intrigued. He's like my kind of horse with not a great sire, kind of like Flower Alley with I'll Have Another, but a really good-looking horse and obviously sound. And, you know, I love the bottom side being a half to Matoli. Was kind of curious to what he thought he was going to get. And when he thought he was 60 or 80,000, I was like, wow, you know, this is definitely worth taking a shot at. And it all came together. I think I ended up paying 110 for him and was really, really excited. And Greg jumped right in, and my nephew jumped in. And, I mean, everybody was really excited about getting in, and Bill Strauss. So it's a great group of guys, and hopefully it works out.
Interestingly, owner Greg Helm, the poobah of Roadrunner Racing, was sold by Hot Rod Charlie's pedigree.
Dennis O'Neill, as you may know, Doug O'Neill's brother, He's been buying some horses for Roadrunner Racing, but mostly two-year-olds in training in the March and April sales. And he gave me a call a year and a half ago with an idea that we might invest in a yearling, something we'd never done before. And I told him that we might be a little bit hesitant to be jumping into that market because we were relatively inexperienced. My group was. Then he told me it was a half-brother to Mattoli, and I quickly said, we'll buy it.
And what does O'Neill view as the one attribute that sets Hot Rod Charlie apart?
He's just game. He's just really, really game. He wants to beat you. He's like that in the mornings when he gallops. He's just a real trier, and he's put him behind horses in the morning, and he wants to get by. He wants to get by. He's very, very competitive and just a game son of a gun.
Despite that tremendous heart, it's still difficult to envision a third Kentucky Derby winner.
I can't. You know, I honestly can't. I was looking at sheets and PPs the other day, and I'm sitting there thinking, my God, he's got a hell of a chance. You know, the first one was such a shock with I'll Have Another, and then Nyquist was such a relief. I honestly thought we'd never get back with a really good chance again. But boy, the more I look at the race, I think he's got a realistic chance to win the race, and that'd be something if he were to pull it off. I just feel so good for Doug. Doug worked so hard. Help work so hard too, and just a great group of owners. It would just be so exciting to see Patrick and Bill and Greg win a Kentucky Derby. I can't even imagine it. Gives me goosebumps just to think about it.
Ever present, Helms Derby dreams continue.
Every day I remind myself to calm down and just be happy that you're going to be having your horse run in the Kentucky Derby. That alone is an honor beyond belief. But it's pretty hard not to be dreaming of seeing ourselves just as excited as we were in New Orleans, replicated in Louisville on May 1st.
Well, this would certainly be an emotional win for Greg Helms' Roadrunner Racing ownership group. But, Kurt, you know, it would also be extremely special for five fraternity brothers from Brown University.
Yeah, those five fraternity brothers also played football for the Ivy League school, known as Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. They were members of Theta Delta Chi, and they came together because one of them, they got involved in the thoroughbred business because one of those fraternity brothers happens to be the nephew of trainer Doug O'Neill. So this is how thoroughbred racing branches out into new worlds and draws in new owners from time to time. Take someone like Patrick O'Neill, who tells his college buddies, you know, horse racing's kind of fun, let's go to the races. And his fraternity brother said, let's buy a horse.
You heard the name Mattoli mentioned in that piece a couple of times. And they said, you know, one thing we liked about him was that he was related to Mattoli.
They like that because Mattoli, very fast horse, champion sprinter 2 years ago in the United States. And Oxbow, the sire, they touched on the fact that Oxbow, the sire of Hot Rod Charlie, may not be the most commercially successful horse. Here's the good thing about today. Oxbow loved a distance of ground. He won the Preakness Stakes. So you've got the best of both worlds. A sire that could cover long distances, a dam that puts a shot of speed into a horse. That's why a lot of people are backing Hot Rod Charlie.
All right, Dan Mason has been poring over the statistics, trying to help you pick a winner for the Derby. Dan Hot Rod Charlie exits a win in the Louisiana Derby. What does that mean for his chances today?
Well, let's got to look at the history of the Louisiana Derby. All the way back, guys, to 1894, but only two Louisiana Derby winners have won the Run for the Roses. That would be Black Gold in 1924, Grindstone in 1996.
And we'll see if Hot Rod Charlie can join that illustrious group later today. If you are just tuning into the coverage this afternoon, you may not have heard the news that King Fury spiked a fever yesterday, was declared out of the Kentucky Derby. He was the horse that was named for heavyweight champion Tyson Fury, who was expected to be in Louisville today to make the walkover with his horse and trainer Ken McPeak. Unfortunately, that will not happen. The other 19 horses that will compete in this year's Derby are now making their way from the barn area, which is on the far side of the racetrack, to what is known as Lucas Gap. And that is where we find our Tom Leach and our Jeff Bloom. Tom, what can you tell us?
Well, we see the first of the 19 Kentucky Derby horses starting to make his way in our direction. And at the moment, that is Obezos, number six, for Greg Foley, who has trained horses for years here on the backside of Churchill Downs. And last year got to experience the walkover with a Derby horse for the first time, but without fans. So I know he's looking forward to hearing the folks cheering on all of these horses on the walkover from this backside to the front side, where they will be saddled in the Churchill Downs paddock. Currently, the 5-2 favorites, Essential Quality. If not for Jim McInvale, a.k.a. Mattress Mac, he'd be probably 7-2 on the tote board right now. Here's the backstory on that. Mattress Mac has gotten some well-deserved attention down in Houston, where he owns a bunch of mattress stores, and he has opened them up at times of winter storms or severe flooding in Houston for folks that were forced out of their homes so they'd have a place to stay for a few nights. And now he has decided in recent years to make a large wager on major sporting events, and if he wins, it's free mattresses for his customers in Houston. So he's betting somewhere, he told us today, between $2 and $3 million on Essential Quality to win the Kentucky Derby as the favorite. And if Essential Quality wins, it's free mattresses in Houston for a guy who says, hey, I'm a promoter. Jeff Bloom.
Yeah, Tom, something different this year. This year's Kentucky Derby is going to be run without Lasix. As the industry works towards the elimination of race day medication, there was a decision made that Lasix would not be allowed. Lasix is a diuretic, and the reason for its use, it's used to help prevent a horse from bleeding in their lungs. How does that happen? It comes from strong exertion. When a horse has heavy training or during the course of the race, they can bleed in their lungs, but in a decision to work on eliminating race day medication, no Lasix will be used by any of the runners in the Kentucky Derby, including if a horse wanted to earn points in any of the Derby earning point races through the series of those races. They were not allowed to use Lasix for any of those races in order to gain points so they could gain their position in this year's Kentucky Derby. Mike?
One trainer who is going to be making that walk today, hoping to find himself in the winner's circle, is Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen. Earlier, Jeff stopped by the barn to visit with Steve.
I'm standing here with trainer Steve Asmussen, and we are in front of the stall of one of his Kentucky Derby runners, Superstock, who's smiling at us. And Steve, you've accomplished virtually everything a trainer can accomplish, yet the elusive Kentucky Derby, and it's always brought up. You've got two chances, and one of those chances is with the horse Superstock. Can you walk us through the horse and what this whole thing means to yourself and your family?
Absolutely. We have two excellent chances going into the Derby. Superstock here being half owned by my parents, as well as Irv Woolsey, longtime friend and partner. Not only is he representing my parents in this barn in their first Derby ever, he also gave my son Keith his first stakes win in his brief COVID possible 45-day racing career, riding career as a jockey. So to think of what a special moment it was to have your son win a stake on a horse that is owned by your parents and Irv Woolsey, and that same horse be the first representative for your parents in the greatest race in the world, the Kentucky Derby.
This is really a family affair. You mentioned your parents and your son, Keith. And correct me if I'm wrong, but your brother, champion jockey Cash Asmussen, was also involved with the early training for Superstock as well, correct?
Well, my brother also is at in Laredo at the training center with my mom and dad's. It's their training center, Cash's as well. And he does the early education on a lot of horses there. As you mentioned, you know, we've been unbelievably blessed in horse racing. Horse racing has given us so much. And then for it to culminate, mom and dad are 79 years old, have dedicated their life to horse racing, and to be on the stage they are now is extremely gratifying. Going into the Arkansas Derby with Superstock, he was touting us. We felt good about his chances, and obviously at that point, I went to dreaming, you know, if he's in first or second in here, he's going to have enough points to get to the Derby. I was already dreaming about it, and then when he did win the Arkansas Derby, the reality of the moment was extremely overwhelming to me. From that moment on, you just have, as good as that moment was, it has been even better.
Have you sat down and reflected and thought much about it, talked with your other family members about not only getting to this point, but what if we cross that finish line first with this horse? What's that going to mean to us?
I don't even know if that's possible. I mean, you just, you know, you watch movies that you have a little trouble believing, and that would be even more so. The circumstances in which the horse is even in the barn, you know, he was purchased for $70,000 as a yearling to be pinhooked and resold as a two-year-old. The two-year-old sale he was in was canceled because of the pandemic. There was just so many very unlikely scenarios to get here. But even since when he won the Futurity with Keith James on him, my son, that night we were talking about, this isn't about us. This is mom and dad's story. How great it would be to dedicate your life to racing, being at 79 years old, and just to be able to be the proud owners of what gave your grandson his only, you know, his first stakes win. So I have one older brother, Cash, extremely accomplished, and being my one older brother and me, to think, you know, my parents in Webb County, Laredo, Texas, raised two Eclipse champions, then you reflect on that, trying to get to a certain point. You kind of get to that point, and then you look back. Mom and Dad have put me and Cash in a position to have this success. Now it's their moment.
What about the walkover heading to the paddock to saddle this horse? The walkover is, of course, so embedded into the history and the fabric of what the Kentucky Derby is all about. Have you thought about how the family will gather together to make that trip across the track?
The only thing I've ever known my mom to ever ask me for is she wanted her six grandkids to walk over with you. That's who she is. I mean, and it's their story.
What will it mean to you to win the Kentucky Derby?
I have no idea because I haven't done it yet.
Best of luck to you, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen now making that walk with his family by his side. It's a special moment. All the horses have begun the walkover, as have our reporters, Jeff Bloom and Tom Leash. Jeff, what can you tell us?
Well, I'm walking alongside trainer Victoria Oliver, a local Kentuckian, with her first Derby starter. And I was saying to Victoria, I don't understand how you can be so calm and collected. Victoria, what does this mean to you to be taking this walk for the Kentucky Derby?
It means the world to me. It's everyone's dream to do this, and I've been lucky enough to be one of the people that gets to do it.
Your horse, Hidden Stash, humble beginnings, a purchase of $50,000, but certainly earned the right to be in this race. How do you see the race playing out?
Well, what I'm hoping for is some pace in front, probably sit mid-pack and come running late. He doesn't usually get in the race real early, so we hope three or four go out there and set the pace first and we come home running home late.
If you win this race, what will it mean to you?
Well, it's history for one, which will be fantastic. And it would just be unbelievable. I mean, I can't even describe how it would feel.
Good luck to you, Victoria. We might see the first female winning trainer of the Kentucky Derby this year. Over to you, Tom.
Here with Greg Foley. He's going to saddle Obezos. And Greg's a longtime trainer here at Churchill Downs. Second time doing this walkover. And last year was a lot different, right?
Yeah, a whole lot different. Yeah, we got some people here, as you see, this year. Big difference, yeah.
Great to hear those fans cheering the horses on. Tell us about how your horses come up to the race.
Tommy's coming in the race good. He had a great work here last week. I think he's fit. I think he's ready. I think he'll like the distance. We're going to sit and finish. Just get a good, clean trip home. That's all.
Good luck.
Thank you, sir.
One of the local guys, trainer Greg Foley. Jeff?
I'm standing alongside last year's Eclipse Award-winning trainer, Brad Cox. Brad, this is the first time you're running in the Kentucky Derby, and you're doing it with two starters. What does this race mean to you?
I mean, it'd be the crowning achievement of anyone's career in North America, as far as I'm concerned. Go ahead.
No, you grew up here, and it's front of a hometown crowd. Does that make it that much more special?
Yeah, for sure, no doubt. And, you know, to have two really live horses, I mean, it's not like these horses just creeped into this race. They belong, and very hopeful they get good trips and big efforts.
Best of luck to you, Brad.
Thanks, Jeff.
Back to you, Mike.
Trainer Greg Foley, one of the locals, as Tom said, grew up in Oldham County, not far from here. Trainer Brad Cox making the walkover for the first time as well with his two horses, including Essential Quality, who is the favorite in the race this afternoon. Let's go back trackside to Tom.
Here with John Sadler as he is getting ready to saddle Rock Your World, who went wire to wire to win the Santa Anita Derby. Would you like to have that kind of trip again, or do you expect something different?
We don't know. You know, with a big field, we got a good outside post. We like a clean trip, and we'll leave it up to Joel Rosario as far as where he puts him.
How's he trained?
Trained very well. He had a great work at Santa Anita last week and did a good week in here, you know, settled in pretty nicely. So we're feeling happy about everything. We just hopefully we get a little good luck. And how great is it to see fans back out here?
Don't those cheers sound fantastic?
Yeah, a little bit of normalcy in America. It's great.
Good luck.
Thank you.
What a scene. The connections all making their way with their Derby contenders around that turn. They are just about to the finish line, but going the opposite way that they will come in just a little while. The Run for the Roses is now just 37 minutes away. In conjunction with NBC Sports, you are listening to the 2021 Kentucky Derby on HRRN.
You're listening to exclusive coverage of the 147th Kentucky Derby on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires.
I will tell you from experience, what you think is a good post can become a bad post at the break. You could get squeezed, you could break slowly, you could stumble, and what could be a bad post can become a great post if you break well. You try as a rider, at least I did, I try and save as much ground on the first turn as you can, because chances are you're going to have to go somewhat wide starting to make your move on the second turn. And my philosophy was by the wire the first time without being knocked around too much. About where you want to be. You can never be exactly where you want to be in the Kentucky Derby early. If you get to within a length or two, I want to be mid-pack. I want to be around 6 or 8 lengths off the lead. If you can do that without getting knocked around, it's a win for you, and then you take what's given you after that.
Sage advice from two-time Kentucky Derby winner, Hall of Famer, and NBC television analyst Jerry Bailey, talking about his approach to riding the Kentucky Derby. But those words can only come from experience. Jerry competed in 17 derbies, but to put that in perspective for you, his fellow Hall of Famer Mike Smith, who will be aboard Midnight Bourbon later today, will be riding in his 27th run for the Roses, passing Bill Shoemaker for most appearances in the Derby all time. But as our Jeff Bloom will tell you, even the greats had to start somewhere.
The Run for the Roses, the greatest 2 minutes in sports. The world's most famous horse race, by any other name, it's the Kentucky Derby. Jockeys often find themselves in the spotlight. And as with most athletic pursuits, the cream rises to the top. But there is a first time for everything. For Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron, his first Kentucky Derby aboard Kojak in 1976 was mostly about family.
We went down to Louisville, and I had the time of my life. It was my first time in the Derby and my brother Greg's first time in the Derby as well. And my dad flew down from Boston to witness the event, and it was one heck of an exciting trip. During that time, I took my dad out to Claiborne Farm, and we got to see Secretariat up close and personal. That was a wonderful experience for me.
The trainer was not pleased.
I kind of ticked off Sonny Hine, the trainer. The colt didn't run as well as we expected him to. I thought we had a really good chance, but he ran kind of a lackluster race. When I got back to the unsaddling area, however, I did one of those Cordero a la Frankie Dettori leaps off of Kojak, and I screamed, "I just rode in the Kentucky Derby! That was awesome!" And Sonny was not too happy with me because he expected the horse to run much better than he did, and so consequently he was a little perturbed about the outcome. And then he wasn't too happy with me that I was celebrating for finishing seventh.
While McCarron and his crew had a ton of fun, fellow Hall of Famer Mike Smith flew solo to ride Pine Circle in 1984. He had a dicey start, but later got an assist from the great broadcaster Howard Cosell.
It was the first time I'd ever flown anywhere to ride. You know, I was very young. You know, when I rode my first Derby, I was 17, 18 years old. Hell, I'd never even gotten a cab before. I didn't know how to get from the airport to the racetrack, to be honest with you. I heard some people saying they were going to Derby, and I caught a ride with them. That was a mistake because, hell, they had to park a mile and a half away from the track, so I had to walk from I might as well have walked from the airport to the track. There was about a group of guys that were all going. There was about 4 or 5 of them, and I told them I was riding Pine Circle, and they were all excited, and we were excited. Of course, they didn't have no parking credentials or nothing, so they had to park so far away, and I had this big old tag bag with me. Man, that bag must have weighed about 200 pounds. But, you know, you learn as you go. Once you get in the room, they pretty much have everything there for you, and it's really pretty easy. But yeah, my first experience, I spent most of the time in the bathroom, to be honest with you, just going back and forth to try and pee, and I couldn't. I was just that nervous. I just kept going back and forth. Once it got closer and closer to the race, of course, you're getting more excited, but I just couldn't wait to get on. You know, I've always been the most comfortable on the back of a horse, and once I was able to get on Pine Circle, then I calmed way down, and everything kind of fell into place. And then I was able to catch a ride back afterwards to the airport with Howard Cosell, man, the back of a limousine. That was pretty neat.
Already an experienced traveler, John Velasquez had a smooth experience with his first trip to the Kentucky Derby to ride Built for Pleasure in 1996.
I was asked to come in and ride in the Derby, and it was incredible, you know, just to have my first night in the Derby and get the experience from it. You know, coming out of the gate, I remember the instructions, you know, he's going to be quick, but I don't want you to go through the inside. So he broke on the lead, like the first 2-3 jumps, and I stayed almost in the middle of the track on past the wire for the first time. And I got a few jockeys mad at me. You know, it was my first Derby. I was just following all the instructions, and the horse broke so well. And I didn't want to go to the inside just because they told me not to be in inside. And coming back, I got yelled at by a few jockeys asking what the heck I was doing. So I said, "Well, guys, I'm sorry. I was just following instructions. What do you want me to do?" That was my experience, and then my first Derby.
The The Hall of Famer learned a few nuances over the years, which has resulted in 3 Kentucky Derby victories.
Most of the time when you go over a mile and a quarter, people just come out of there as easily as possible. You know, they don't want to use the horses too much the first part of the race. Where the Derby's completely opposite. Everybody's come out running to try to get their best position possible they can get. I mean, it's 20 horses. It's probably one of the roughest races that you're going to ride. Be prepared for it, though. You know, you got to be prepared for yourself to that first quarter of a mile that it's going to be pretty intense. And be aware. Try to do your best to get the position you can and hold your position until you're comfortable with, you know. So that's probably the best advice you can give anybody.
Great advice, and only coming from experience of riding the Kentucky Derby, it is like nothing else that you could ever imagine when you come here for the first time. When we return, you will hear from trainer Brad Cox, and we will join singer Jack Harlow for the call of Riders Up from NBC Sports and Horse Racing Radio Network. This is the 147th Kentucky Derby.
You're listening to the 2021 Kentucky Derby on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You know, when I born, when I came from, we always had the Derby in the mind. That's the everybody's dream. And I know that we win a big race, the Saudi Cup and Dubai World Cup, but the Derby is something that everybody wanna have. So it's a big win for me if I win, and well, for all my family.
It's Maximum Security. He's never lost a race, and he wins it under Luis Saez.
Hold on tickets. There's a rider's objection in this race, and it concerns the top 2 finishers. There's been a disqualification. Number 7, Maximum Security, disqualified from first for interference.
We was pretty sad when the steward decided to take him down. But I, you know, I never lost my faith. I always keep my head up, and well, we're here again, so we hope all the best. And I know Essential, he's gonna run pretty good, so we're excited for Saturday.
Welcome back to Churchill Downs in Louisville. That was jockey Luis Saez looking for a little redemption here this afternoon after having a Kentucky Derby taken away from him 2 years ago in 2019 with that disqualification of Maximum Security. He is hoping to experience that feeling yet again in just 27 minutes. Trainer Brad Cox is the trainer of the horse Luis Saez will be riding. That is the favorite, Essential Quality. And earlier, Tom Leach had a chance to stop by the barn and catch up with Brad.
So, Brad, in 2018, there's a sign outside on your barn about Monomoy Girl winning the Kentucky Oaks. That was your first grade one, Louisville guy, grew up near here. And now, 3 years later, you're the favorite for the Derby, just won an Eclipse Award as the outstanding trainer. You ever stop and think about how far things have come in such a short time?
Not really. No, you know, we stay busy and, you know, just keep grinding away and, you know, just kind of always pressing forward. You know, you're never content with the you know, what you've accomplished. I mean, you want to build off of it and continue to move forward. And Monomoy Girl taught me a lot. She was my first taste of grade one water, and it tasted well. And you know, that's what you want. You know, I mean, Kenny McPeak told me years ago, he said, you know, when you win graded stakes, I mean, it's like drinking fine wine, and you don't go back to the, you try not to go back to the cheap stuff. So it's, you know, the position we're in is exactly where we'd like to be. You know, we have 2 really good shots in the Kentucky Derby. You know, this is the biggest stage in the thoroughbred industry in North America, as far as I'm concerned.
How far away from this track did you grow up?
2 blocks outside the back gate 10.
So did they park cars on Oaks and Derby weekend in your parents' yard?
They did, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I helped out, but once the races started, I was glued to the races, so I didn't care about parking cars too much.
Do you remember the first favorite Derby winner or first Derby you saw?
Well, the first Derby I was actually on the grounds for would have been, I think, 92 Little E.T. I was on the backside. I can remember, like, Winning Colors, Ali Sheba, those 2, I think it was 87, 88. I can remember those a little bit, bits and pieces about it. I don't remember, like, Dwayne Lucas, obviously. It's, you know, I can kind of remember the names, and then obviously Lucas was taken off at that time. So those are small things I remember as a kid growing up.
Let's talk about Essential Quality as the favorite for the Derby off 2 nice wins, undefeated. And how has he trained up to the race?
Really well. I mean, he bounced out of the bluegrass in great shape. His 2 works have been solid enough. His last work, I think people were kind of saying, oh, well, the other horse galloped out. But without other horse, a fantastic workhorse. And Essential Quality gives him all he wants every time. The exercise rider that breeds him several times since last fall. And come back and say, wow, I mean, you know, he could have done whatever I wanted. So, you know, we're in a good spot with him. He's doing really well.
Other than just
the time on a stopwatch when a horse is training up to the first race, especially, mm-hmm. or anything else you can see on paper, what let you know that Essential Quality was special?
Probably just as, you know, his physical, you know, just, you know, I thought he was a great physical. The pedigree suggested he would be a horse that could stretch out. His ability to, I think, shut it off. You know, you never really know when you run these horses and you run them first time out and you ask them to go three quarters if they're going to respond in a the right way or the wrong way. And I mean wrong way by like basically kind of getting maybe over the top mentally. And that's really separates a class horse from a horse that can take it to the next level. They have the mental stability to take it all in and still perform in the afternoon.
Essential Quality's getting the lion's share of the attention as the favorite for the Derby, but Mandaloon is a horse that also last late summer and fall really showed some big-time potential.
Yeah, he was able to break his maiden first time out. Another colt we liked a lot. Was able to start off his career 2-for-2 and then ran a real good race in LeCompte. He was third, but he ran a great race. But his first race around two turns, we thought it was exactly what we wanted. He moved forward in his next start in Risen Star that, in my eyes, made him, you know, possibly one of the top two or three Derby contenders out there. And Louisiana Derby, I mean, just no excuse. I mean, I wish we had could give you some reason why he ran as flat as he did. But, you know, I'm glad that he came out of it in good order physically. And, you know, here we are. He's training as well leading up to the Kentucky Derby as he is the Louisiana Derby and the Risen Star. So if we get his Risen Star race, we're in good shape. If we get his Louisiana Derby race, we're not going to be very happy with that.
These horses train and prepare for races in a similar fashion all year round. For a race like the Derby, there's so much more attention paid to every aspect of it because we have to wait so long for the race to actually happen. Do you have to ever talk to yourself about, don't let anything get in my head, don't let anybody else try to train my horse for me?
Not really. I don't. You know, I think coming into this, I thought, you know, as far as all the media attention for myself, I thought, you know, I'm going to take this in and enjoy it, do as many interviews as I can, and, you know, enjoy it. It's a great opportunity, and, you know, I'd rather guys be coming by to interview me as opposed to the guy next door, right? So that's the way I've approached that.
So 2 blocks away from here, you grew up, could hear the call to the post while you were playing out in the yard, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So have you allowed yourself to think about what it would be like to be in the winner's circle on the first Saturday of May?
I have. I think about it, and, you know, it's, I guess I just try to map out how my horse is going to get around there, what kind of trip they're going to get. Hopefully a clean one. I think that's what you need. And I've thought, you know, look, if we were fortunate enough to win this thing, you know, how it would be, it'd be an amazing feeling. And, you know, it's the top achievement in this game for a thoroughbred trainer as far as I'm concerned.
So Brad Cox, 2 chances to win your first Kentucky Derby. Good luck.
Thanks, Tom. I really appreciate it.
Brad Cox standing in that Derby paddock now for the very first time, as are Jeff Bloom and Tom Leach. Tom, what can you tell us?
Brad Cox just finished putting the saddle on the Derby favorite Essential Quality a few moments ago. I'm looking at Essential Quality standing in his stall right now. Some of the horses are still being walked around this saddling area, but Essential Quality is in his stall. It's a beautiful steel gray colt. He wears white and blue blinkers, and blinkers are put on a horse to help them focus sometimes if they tend to look and take in the sights of too many other things, be it rivals or crowd or whatever, and that's something that Essential Quality has been outfitted in for a long time. He's standing very calmly in his stall. Rock Your World, the second choice, saddled right next to him. He's in the walking ring right now, but no issues down here. Everybody seems calm. I did hear fans chanting for Hot Rod Charlie, so that's something certainly we didn't hear a year ago. Jeff Bloom, you own racehorses as part of the Bloom Racing stable, and I imagine this is the moment for the owners of these horses, when it feels real or so real.
Well, this is a dream come true. This is what everybody who gets in the game aspires to accomplish, find their way into, you know, the big dances on Saturday afternoons, and in particular to run in one of the classics, the Kentucky Derby. It's hard to get there. The crazy thing is just getting a horse to a race is a big deal. Getting a horse to be a good horse and run in a race like the Kentucky Derby is near to impossible, considering there's only 20 post positions for the tens of thousands of horses that are born each and every year. And I can assure you that every single owner, no matter what the walk of life or where they come from or what their background is feeling the same level of excitement, the same amount of anxiety, and the same amount of anticipation. One thing I can tell you for sure, Tom, and that's from the time they leave the paddock while they wait for the horses to make their way into the starting gate, it may only be about 15 to 20 minutes for all of us, but it's an eternity for those owners waiting to see the outcome of the Kentucky Derby.
Mike?
In just a moment, we'll head back to the paddock. Singer Jack Harlow is going to give us the call for riders up. Then the riders will get a leg up from their trainers. They'll be in the saddle. They'll make a lap or two around that Churchill Downs paddock through the tunnel and onto the main track for the post parade. Let's head to Travis Stone.
Trainer Dwayne Lucas, as we celebrate the 25th anniversary of Grindstone's Kentucky Derby win.
Ladies and gentlemen, the city of Louisville and the Commonwealth of Kentucky and sports fans all across the world are waiting for this moment. Riders up!
Well, there you go. That was not singer Jack Harlow, by the way. That was Hall of Famer Dwayne Lucas, and who better to do riders up than the four-time Derby winner?
As they say in the horse business, apparently Dwayne drew in off the also eligible list, and what a person to have to give the call for riders up. Hall of Famer, four-time Derby winning trainer.
I wonder if he'll be cheering for Jim Boeheim today. Dwayne Lucas, a former basketball coach. He's a guy who loves to win, as does Jim Boeheim.
He does, and of course, Dwayne Lucas has proteges that came up under him as assistant trainers that have horses going to the post, including Todd Pletcher, who sends out four starters here this afternoon, all at double-digit odds right now.
It is time for that special moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, the management and staff and horsemen of Churchill Downs proudly present the 147th running of the Kentucky Derby, presented by Woodford Reserve. Please rise as the University of Louisville Marching Band plays My Old Kentucky Home.
Another stirring renewal of a tradition which dates back to 1930, and no doubt music to the ears of thousands of racing fans who were unable to be in attendance for that song 8 months ago. Many of them now wiping tears from their eyes, thankful to be gathered once again beneath the Twin Spires. In conjunction with NBC Sports, you are listening to the 2021 Kentucky Derby on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires.
You're listening to exclusive coverage of the 147th Kentucky Derby on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires.
To me, I've never thought about breaking records. They happen. I usually hear about them afterwards. I didn't really realize it till after we won it. So I'm just, you're just trying to get there. You know, when I'm through racing, I guess I can look back on it. But I've never set a goal like I want that record or I want to win that one race or. I mean, there's certain races I haven't won. I like winning them. They'll tell me, hey, that's the first time you've won that race, really. But I really don't pay attention to that too much.
Well, he can't help but pay attention to his six Derby wins. That's Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert. Welcome back to Churchill Downs in Louisville, Kentucky, where the Run for the Roses now just 11 minutes away. Mike Pennock, Kurt Becker, Tom Leach, Jeff Bloom, and Dan Mason with you high above the finish line. Our producers, Daryl Doss and Sean C. Lee Delapina in our Lexington studios. The 147th running of the Run for the Roses, grade one, with a purse of $3 million. That means the winner will pocket $1.86 million for a victory here this afternoon. A wide open race in a lot of respects, Kurt. Many people have said, okay, essential quality. Yes, he's a deserved favorite. He is undefeated. He's the juvenile champion from last year, the two-year-old champion. If essential quality doesn't dominate this field today, there's a good chance that anybody could win it.
Yeah, essential quality has never been a horse to go out and overpower or overwhelm the competition. But what he does is win races. He's never been beaten. So he might not be a flashy horse, but he's a horse that knows how to get to the finish line first. We'll soon find out if that holds true here this afternoon, the biggest test of his career.
51,838 racing fans back at Churchill Downs on this first Saturday in May. Fast main track, temperatures in the mid-70s, a racetrack that is awash in sunshine. It is a spectacular day for the 147th running of the greatest 2 minutes in sports. We're going to check in behind the starting gate with Jeff Bloom. Jeff, these are definitely anxious moments for the Connections, who now can only watch as the jockeys are aboard the horses. They are completing the final preparations. What can you tell us, my friend?
Well, I can tell you we are just off the quarter pole, being it's a quarter mile stretch, and the assistant starters here at the starting gate just closed the front latches, and I started getting butterflies in my stomach. I can only imagine what's going on in the stomachs of the jockeys that are approaching the starting gate. Speaking of which, this is a starting gate that's a single gate. Back in the old days, we had two gates, an auxiliary gate, because we couldn't fit all 20 horses into one gate. Last year was the first time it was used. This year will be the first time used in front of a crowd. And the official starter here, Scott Jordan, who's been here for a number of years, one of the best in the business, actually had a hand in the construction and the build of this gate in terms of how he wanted it to be, how he wanted the boards to be and the pads inside the gate. So everybody's very pleased with the fact that we have a single starting gate. And what they do is they lowered the horses two by two. They go from the one and the 10, the two to the 11, and so on, so that they can get the horses in here. And Scott was telling me earlier that there's never been a time for a Kentucky Derby that he's worked where it's taken them longer than 2 minutes to load the horses. I can tell you that all the horses are circling behind the gate. We've got about six horses already loaded in, and pretty much to a horse, every one of the horses back here alongside their ponies is acting the part. The jockeys are making their final adjustments with their stirrups. They're getting the reins set the way they want them, and they're going to go into that starting gate and hope to stand as quietly as possible with an assistant starter lending a hand to each and every one of the horses. There's 24 of those guys to assist the official starter to get this gate and to get the running of this race off as smoothly as possible. But we got about six horses back. Here you go, Mike.
All right, moving into line, this is somewhat of a Tom Brady versus Patrick Mahomes type of situation. You have the seasoned veteran Bob Baffert, six-time Derby winner, the young up-and-comer, and Brad Cox with the Derby favorite. Who is going to win Derby 147? We are just moments away. Larry Colmus from NBC has the call here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Boosh will be the last to load here. 19 three-year-olds all in line and ready for the start. They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And off to a solid beginning here, and it will be Medina Spirit who comes out the best to take the early lead. Soup and Sandwich on the outside, away running in second. Helium is close up to the pace in between those two, and these three will lead them early. And then it's Hot Rod Charlie behind them, Mandaloon on the inside. Essential Quality is outside of horses and four lengths from the front early. And then it's Superstock, followed by Highly Motivated. Rock Your World's coming from well off the pace here as they make their way into the turn. He's a good 10 lengths off the lead. Then toward the inside, it's Old Pesos. They're being followed by Midnight Bourbon, who's well off the pace as well. Mike the King is next on the inside. Then Brooklyn Strong, Dynamic One is next. Known Agenda, followed on the outside by Hidden Stash. And at the back of the pack earlier, Bourbonic. And the trailer is Keep Me In Mind. The first half mile was 46.7 seconds, and Medina Spirit leads them up the backstretch. The Bob Baffert trainee is three quarters of a length in front. Soup and Sandwich on the outside second. Mandaloon drafts in right behind the front runners, third on the inside. Then it's Helium in fourth. Hot Rod Charlie behind them. Essential Quality begins to move on the far outside as they make their way around the far turn. Medina Spirit is still the leader here. And Mandaloon comes on the scene on the outside, a half length behind. Essential Quality is put to pressure. Hot Rod Charlie right in behind the leaders. Flabby and Pratt asking him to go now as they make their way to the top of the stretch.
Medina Spirit and Mangalone are stride for stride. Hot Rod Charlie and Essential Quality closing on the outside. The four of them come into the final furlong. Mangalone fighting for the front. Medina Spirit battles on. Hot Rod Charlie on the outside. Essential Quality on the far outside. The four of them coming to the finish in the Kentucky Derby. Here's the wire. Bob Beveridge does it again. Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby. Mangalone was second. Hot Rod Charlie was third. Essential Quality was fourth. 2:01:02 the final time. Bob Beveridge stands alone with seven Derby wins.
Are you kidding me? How good is Bob Beveridge? We knew he was good, but this is absolutely ridiculous. A seventh Kentucky Derby win, a second in a row for Bob Beveridge and for jockey John Velasquez. The Hall of Fame connections holding off all challengers after making the pace in here. But what a performance here today. I told you going into the gate, it was a lot like Tom Brady versus Patrick Mahomes. But just like in the Super Bowl, Tom Brady, Bob Beveridge get the victory here today.
And it seems like the instructions were the same as what they were a year ago with Authentic. I think Bob Beveridge told jockey John Velasquez, go right to the front, take the lead early, make them come and chase you. When you get to the front of the field, one of the benefits, you get over to the rail. You get to save ground around both turns. You don't get dirt kicked back in your face. The horse can have a lot of confidence. That game plan worked a year ago. It works again this year for the same trainer-jockey combination. And in 147 years of the Kentucky Derby, we've just seen history made, as Larry Colmus referenced, Bob Baffert, an unprecedented seventh career title here.
You know, you just can't count the guy out.
This is a return to Bob Baffert's Kentucky Derby route. You think back, his first Derby win in 1997, Silver Charm was not an expensive horse, just had a lot of heart. His second Derby winner was Real Quiet. He bought him for $17,500 as a yearling. Today, he wins for the seventh time in this race, and this time with Medina Spirit, who sold for $1,000 as a yearling. But, you know, they did have to go all the way to $35,000 when the current connections bought him as a two-year-old. $35,000, and he wins the Kentucky Derby.
Jeff Bloom is standing by trackside with more.
Florent, a game effort by your horse. Just not quite enough to get there, but a huge effort nonetheless.
Yeah, no, huge effort, but a big disappointment, you know, for myself. But not on the horse. I thought the horse ran his eyeball out. He was trying as hard as he could. Just disappointed of the outcome, you know. Just you got to beat ahead in the Kentucky Derby, so... it's a tough one to swallow.
All right, thanks so much, Florent. Tom?
We just heard about the trip for Mangalone. We're here with trainer Brad Cox, who saddled both Mangalone and Essential Quality. So talk to us about what you saw in Essential Quality's trip.
It looked like he's getting out around the turn a little bit. You know, Louis said he's a little bit shying away from the horses a little bit, and he was leaning out around the turn. He felt like if he would have been a little more focused on running straight, that he would have could have won the race. You know, he was a little wide around both turns as well. Maybe didn't get away the greatest, maybe used him a little bit to get in position going under the wire the first time. Overall, I thought he run big. I thought he was in good position turning for home, just didn't have enough to get to the leader late.
Try him again in the Preakness?
That you will have to totally see how he comes out of it. You know, that's 2 weeks. That's tough.
Thanks, Brad. That's Brad Cox. He saddled two of the top four finishers in this year's Derby, but wanted the winner, obviously.
Jeff Bloom is trackside with more.
Yeah, standing alongside trainer Doug O'Neill. What a huge effort by your horse. Not quite getting there, but it looked like a moment he might get there. You've done this. You've won it twice. What were you thinking as they were coming down the stretch?
You know, I thought he was going to get there. He ran. I'm so proud of this horse. And of course, you want to win every race you're in. But, you know, he ran such a winnable race that where you just, he's a horse that tries hard every time. And I haven't had a chance to talk to Flavian Pratt yet, but I'm thinking he's going to say, you know, he didn't have the cleanest first quarter of a mile of this race, but man, Flavian's so good. And he had to check on the brakes a little bit, but never took the run out of the horse. And he ran dynamite, but, you know, Baffert, freaking Baffert. Can't beat the son of a gun. He has his horses so ready to run every time he leads them over. So, you know, tons of credit to Bob and his team and Amers and Ann Racing. So, we'll have a rematch somewhere down the road.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, brother.
Back to you, Mike.
Moments ago, NBC's Kenny Rice had a chance to catch up with the Hall of Fame trainer, Bob Beveridge.
What did you think coming in?
Well, I knew he was training well, but I'm really, really surprised. When I saw him on the easy lead, I kept waiting for these horses to come at him. But Johnny had him in a perfect spot, and if you have him on the lead, he'll fight. When those horses came to him, I cannot believe he won this race. That little horse, that was him. It was all guts. And, you know, I was a little disappointed with his last race. He didn't run well and came in here, trained well for it. And I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I mean, his owner, Emmer, you know, I told him, I think we got a chance, but, you know, maybe he's not. I'm so spoiled bringing these heavy-duty horses in here, but I'm telling you, that little horse has got a heart, such a big heart, and this guy made it happen.
What does it mean to set the record now, Bobby? It's the seventh time. Nobody's ever won this many times.
I just can't believe it hasn't sunk in yet, but, I love the record and all that, but you know what? It's one of those things where I'm just so thrilled. Because when you win it, you never know if you're ever going to be back. Because it's so difficult. And to win a seventh, I think Bill Belichick gave me a lot of good luck the other day when we did that little interview. And so, you know, we stay focused, keep working at it, and hopefully you'll get here. And I couldn't be prouder of my team. But that little horse, he won it today. I mean, he doesn't know how much he cost. But you know what? What a little racehorse. He was all racehorse today.
Congratulations, Bob.
Thank you.